This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 22, for May 25th, 2008. Web load testing with Egg Glass. Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and welcome to Thirsty Developer, episode number 22. You won't hear Dave Bost in today's episode. Dave and I have been really busy, and he's been especially busy doing these new hands-on labs that he's created called CodeFest. And we've been unable to sync up to record the introductions to the Thirsty Developer episodes, but I've had a lot of good opportunities to record some great interviews. We actually have a backlog of interviews coming up for you. We'll actually probably be publishing a couple of them this week. I have one quick bit of administrivia before we get to today's show, and that is about our Zoom contest. Our Zoom contest is still open for the listeners of the Thirsty Developer who want to send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. We're going to enter you in a random drawing for the chance to win a new Zoom 80 with thanks for listening to the Thirsty Developer branded on the back of it. And all you have to do is answer one question to enter the contest, and that is, what can Microsoft do better? This is the end of Microsoft's fiscal year 2008, and we're starting our planning. This week we'll be doing a lot of it for fiscal year 09, and one of the things we want is your feedback on what Microsoft can do better, and more importantly, what we as evangelists in the field, like Dave and myself, can do better to serve you, our listening public, and also the people we interact with on a day-to-day basis. So with that piece of administrivia out of the way, I'll go ahead and give you guys a quick introduction to today's episode. I got a chance to do an interview with Egg Glass, who is a member of the Team System development team. So these are the guys that actually work on Visual Studio Team System. He's the head of the web load testing part of the product, and he had a lot of good information to share, both on what the actual product team system can do, but more importantly, just web load testing in general. So it doesn't matter if you use the product or not. He's just got some good information to share about web load testing in general. And with that, I'll go ahead and lead you guys into the interview. Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm bringing this interview to you from the QAI conference here in Chicago. That's a quality assurance conference, and it's kind of weird for me because, you know, as a developer and architect, I kind of feel like an enemy combatant because everybody around here is, you know, kind of sees us as the people that that create quality problems. But I'm here with Ed Glass from Microsoft. Ed, can you introduce yourself? Tell us what you do.
Yeah, I'm Ed Glass from Microsoft, and I am a developer like you. The unusual thing is I'm building testing tools. And the first set of tools that my team built were the web test and load test tools in Visual Studio 2005. We enhanced them in 2008. Yes. And right now we're working on...
So that's part of the team system, you know?
Yeah, part of Visual Studio team system. These tools are in the team test box or tester edition. Has different names, but that's where you'll find them.
Okay.
And very powerful tools. One of the things we wanted to do is a pattern we saw was people weren't tackling performance problems till very late in the cycle. So it'd be 2 weeks, and they're going to put something into production and say, hey, how about we run some load tests against that? And a lot of the reason was because the developers didn't have the tools. The
right.
Tools were they're super expensive. Only a few people in the company are privileged enough to be able to use them. And so we really wanted to push performance testing and subsequently load testing to be more part of the life cycle, push it down to developers to give them that set of tools they could use earlier in the cycle.
Yeah, before coming to Microsoft, that was one of the two of the patterns you just mentioned that I noticed is one, that you had to book the people that did the load testing out like way out in advance because there was like one or two guys that A, had the license, and B, also had the expertise because the tools were pretty complicated to set up and run. The other thing I noticed is that people would generally wait until very late in the cycle to discover that they had, you know, performance or a scalability issue.
Yeah.
It was something like, all right, we're going live on Sunday. We might want to do the performance test on Friday. That's probably not the best time to do that, right?
Right. And, a pretty significant amount of time, it's actually an architectural problem. So it's not something you can throw more hardware at or tweak a stored procedure or, it's fundamental changes you need to make to your application, which obviously you don't want to find those 2 weeks before you're supposed to go live.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally you hear the story about, well, we changed one line of code and it quadrupled the performance, or you know, it was we had a tenfold increase. But but fundamentally, usually it's like, wow, we're making too many database calls. How do we not do that? Let's go back and rethink it.
Yeah.
Not something you can do, you know, if you test on Friday and then you got to roll out on Sunday.
Right. And you know, to your point, that load testing is complicated. You know, it's not an easy thing, not a light undertaking. At the same time, it's not rocket science either. And you can find there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. And you know, I just differentiated between load testing and performance testing.
Okay.
And performance testing is really how fast is the application responding. A really interesting question is, how fast does it respond when a lot of people are using it? So it's a, you know, load testing enables you to simulate a lot of concurrent users hitting your server at the same time, and does performance go in the tank when they do? But you know, most problems are found not through load testing, but just through running the app. And a lot of times it's a function of the scale of the data, right? So you're developing on your test system and you've got a few hundred rows of SQL in your rows in your SQL table, and your application's performant. Now you go into production and there's 50,000 rows in that table, and all of a sudden things start slowing down.
Yeah, because there's a different set of indexes that get hit, you know, when you start increasing the scale in your data.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things change when you change the scale.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We had Richard Campbell, you know, the guy from .NET Rocks, on the show a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And he actually said that the definition of performance is how your application behaves when there's one person on there.
Okay.
You know, how fast is it?
So I would disagree with that definition, but yes, four people and you get four different definitions. But
yeah.
I think performance is any time you're measuring response time of your system. And measuring that while a lot of people are using it is actually very interesting. If you have a database on the back end, you might see concurrency problems due to locking, which you're not going to see with a single user hitting it. So I think there are definitely a class of problems that you'll encounter through load testing, performance problems you encounter through load testing. There's another class of problems you encounter through having multiple concurrent users, which is you know, people stepping on each other's data. Maybe you have locking problems and contention problems to resources, and can, if you have multiple people hitting the data, that they're going to start stepping on each other's data and causing faults in the application. But I think the first order bit is really perf under load. That's what I'd say the first set of problems, the most common problems. But then there's also definitely concurrency problems that people will find as well.
So how does one, you know, what? And I would say that, you know, my facetious answer when somebody says when I should do, you know, load performance testing, you know, I always say, well, early and often.
Yeah.
But realistically, you know, kind of what's, you know, what have you seen as kind of a best practice, you know, around that area?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. So one is I agree with early and often, but it doesn't come free. So you have to run the test. You have to analyze the results. You have to compare it, you know, however you're running from, you know, time to time to time. Data population is a hard problem. So to accurately measure performance, you got to get your data size right. And if your database is churning along with your code, you need data population tools. So it's a hard problem. But my general take is that you should do it. If you do an architectural prototype, you think, hey, this is the architecture we want to use. It actually doesn't take that huge amount of effort to validate your architecture before you sink months and months into that architecture to find out it's problematic.
And generally, if you're doing an architectural prototype, it's because you're concerned about one area. You know, can we get the throughput? You know,
right. You know, you really want to go end-to-end with it and validate, hey, is the end-to-end going to hold together?
A lot of times it's just flat-out, can we get this to work, period? But then probably the best thing to do is go, okay, now will it meet, you know, our performance goals?
Right.
And in the prototype stage, your performance goals may be, you know, very, you know, loose, right?
Right.
We think we may have 2,000 people on this, so maybe let's test for 4.
Right.
You know? But, you know, you may find as you go along that, well, no, it's not 2,000, it was 10,000, but you know, it could be very loose and cloudy at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And so the figuring out, you know, how many users you want to simulate and how much data you're going to have. So, and then, you know, a lot of times the actual performance goals at the prototype stage may be more exploratory testing to say, well, let's see where are we at? And is that good enough or not? Maybe you don't have the goal specced out yet. But I think that is a really key part of performance testing, is that you do say, how good is good enough?
Yeah.
And that you're clear on that. And because you can go on tuning until, you know, the cows come home.
Yeah, I encountered that about 10 years ago. You know, we had got our application up to 10,000, you know, inbound new transactions, you know, an hour.
Uh-huh.
And we said, you know, oh, you know, we, there's some things we can tune. Our business sponsor came to us and said, guys, if we get 10,000 an hour in 2 weeks, we'll have to buy a new mainframe. So so don't worry about that. We're expecting 10,000 maybe in the first year.
Right.
You know, yeah. So if you guys actually, you know, if we're so wildly successful that we get 10,000 an hour, trust me, we have other problems to deal
with. That's right.
You
know? Yeah, so that's a great example. And there are general guidelines around performance and what users can perceive or not perceive, and thresholds at which they say, oh, that's fast enough, or I can tolerate that, or I'm leaving.
There's no way somebody's putting up with 10 seconds per page.
Yeah, 10 seconds is one of the thresholds at which, you know, it better be something important to get them to stick around, because they're not sticking around. And actually, 2 seconds is they're noticing that it's slow, and under a second, they don't notice. So there's interesting thresholds like that. So your homepage, probably want it coming up in under a second.
Oh, yeah.
So, but then there's also interesting variables around that, right? Where are your users coming from? So if your users are coming, if you're a global company and users are coming from China or India or Europe, you have to take bandwidth and network latency into consideration as well.
And your tools, the ones that ship with Visual Studio, actually, you know, that's one of the parameters that you can save.
You can. But I always caution people when they use that, because our tool right now just does bandwidth simulation.
Okay.
It does not simulate latency. And so latency is, you know, is ping time. So you ping your server, and is it 5 milliseconds or is it 1 second? 1 second ping times, which you can have pretty good bandwidth, but high latency, and it's not going to catch those. And actually, we have a toolkit inside of Microsoft that we're taking a hard look at putting into our next release. It's a really fantastic toolkit for doing network emulation at the network driver layer. It can do latency, bandwidth, and
so this is an internal tool to Microsoft that we use.
Yes, Microsoft Research developed, and teams, you know, performance teams throughout the company use it.
And probably would have to, you know, have a lot of polish put on it, but then it could eventually wind its way into the product.
Exactly.
We're not promising anything to anybody listening to the podcast,
that
sounds really cool.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other questions I have, because, you know, having worked on projects again before coming to Microsoft, now that I'm an evangelist, I get to go around and talk to people who are doing cool things. I used to do cool things. I always had a discussion with people about when we were doing performance testing, are we really testing the application or are we testing the environment? Because oftentimes we couldn't actually do a performance test on the actual environment itself.
Right.
And we would always run into issues because of that.
Right. So, you know, this is where I say, you know, we talked about doing performance testing at the architectural stage. And then I think you got to decide what's right for you, but take the checkpoints at whatever interval makes sense. But you want to do it as you go. And the key there is that, okay, so now you go into production, you've never run a performance test before, and you're starting to see problems. Is that due to the environment or due to your software? If you've never run the test, you just don't know.
Right.
So now if you can come in and say, no, I was running performance tests against that web service in our lab and getting these kind of response times with that size of data, there's a problem with the environment here. Wow, does that save tons of time immediately? You've isolated where the problems are coming from and know where to go look for them. And we've had customers who had that very, very story of, you know, now they can go to the ops people who are not the easiest people to work with.
Right.
And say, no, here's the data. Look at this. And let's look at the network, or let's look at the machine configuration, or, you know, things like that.
Yeah. In my specific example, just to make it a little more real for people, it turns out we had an environment, QA environment, that kind of mirrored production, not on the same scale. So there were 2 servers, not 4.
Yeah.
So we test the load balancing, you know, it was the basic configuration, just not as big of an environment.
Yeah.
And that was always performing faster. And they said, well, you know, it must be latency or some other issue. Turns out that they had the database boxes and the web servers, the switch that they were plugged in to communicate with was like a 10 megabit switch that
there
was
you
left,
go.
Left over from the 90s.
Yeah.
And the QA environment, ironically enough, was running gigabit.
that's funny.
That's like two orders of magnitude different there.
Right,
So they were able to solve the problem. I think it was, $150 managed switch, And that, wow. those are the performance problems you want to find, right?
That it's exactly.
It's a hardware
that's right.
problem.
You want it to be a configuration problem when you're going into production, not a problem with your software.
So previously in the show, we've talked about cyclomatic complexity as a metric that you'd want to measure from version to version.
Yeah.
So that, you'd say, you kind of set a threshold with your team that, granted we're adding more features, so the code may get more complex.
Right.
But we don't want to increase it by more than 10%. That's
right.
kind of an SLA.
Right.
Is that a good thing with performance to know what your baseline was with the last one so that when you do changes?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I measure that in two ways. One is... response. So there's response time, throughput, and then resource utilization. So response time is if I'm sending requests, how fast do they come back? Throughput is how many can we send, from the server? How fast can we send them? Not response time. And then the
right.
resource utilization is how much CPU and memory does it take to send them? So if you have same response time, same throughput, but you're using twice as much CPU, something happened. That's not good. You got to go look into it.
Right.
So I think looking at those things, and those are mostly, if you're talking SQL, then disk I/O becomes interesting as well. Network sometimes, but usually it's going to be response time, throughput, and CPU.
And there's probably 1,000 different ways to slice those, but as long as you've got a good metric in each one of those categories.
Yeah, and something we're working on in the tool, and we actually have this data in the database, and we don't have a great reporting solution to really eyeball that. And I'm really a big believer in this. I call this the performance lifecycle, right? Where you're incorporating performance testing early and you're doing it at regular intervals. And then you really become tantamount that you can see the trends. And you can see when you're getting slower. You can see when you're using more resources. We have a cool Excel integration we're working on where you go, our data is in SQL and we're leveraging Excel pivot tables to then do the trend data. You say, I want to compare this run, and this run, or 10 runs, whatever. And so it's really cool. And we do have up on codeplex.com/loadtestreports, a set of reports that run off SQL reporting services.
Okay.
That will show you trend data. So that's...
And no matter what database they're writing their application against, you're always storing in SQL, so that's why SQL reporting services is
the correct
tool for that.
Mining the data, and we're jamming it into SQL Server. And then one of the benefits there is now you can get all the reporting and Excel integration onto SQL Server and leverage that.
So two last questions to kind of wrap up, because I know you got to head out of town here. One is, we saw some definite improvements in, TFS 2008 and Team System, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you give us any kind of glimpse about what might be, vNext? What are kind of some of the things you're looking for? Again, no promises.
No promises. That's right. So I'll split that up. So I'm going to take a test focus to that.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm very passionate about load testing and web testing. We have a bunch of cool features we're working on there. One is this Excel integration, super powerful. And we're actually looking at, can we release that as a power tool? And we think so. But kind of got to sort that out yet. And then we're also working on collecting more data, so better integration with the profiler. So a cool scenario is how I'm running this load test and I see a spike in performance. What exactly was going on in the code when that spike hit? And so we're working with the profiler team who's enabling remote profiling off using a data collector technology. So we'll have an agent running on the mid-tier that's doing the sample profiles. And then you can jump from the load test analyzer spike into the code profiler.
So like you've got like load test agents that run distributed through
yes.
the environment, you'd have
a data collection
profiler.
Agent, exactly.
That's hot.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah. Really cool. Yeah. So it's very exciting. In general, for testing, we're really focusing on manual functional testing, which is how most testing gets done.
Right.
And making those testers way more productive and work way better with with developers and have some really cool technology around bug capture. So these same data collectors we talked about running in a load test can also run in a manual test. And the team developer team is working on deep diagnostics that are running on the mid-tier, and they can take traces and do what they call historical debugging. But, you know, imagine you could take a dump that has this time series data of everything that was going on for a certain period of time, you know, 5-minute span, whatever.
Yep.
And then pull that into Visual Studio, and the debugger, you can see all the threads, all the call stacks, what variables are getting passed in. And so it's really breaking the no repro curse is what we want to get to.
Right. And that's always been kind of the bane of, you know, the manual testing, right? Is that, you know, because oftentimes you're moving to a different machine, you know, the developer is not actually sitting there with the QA person.
Yeah.
And the QA person a lot of times can't recreate the error, right?
Exactly. Can't, or the environment. So now
it could be grab it. In a distributed system, you know, it could be that, you know, a service failed during her first test, his or her first test.
Yeah.
And then it's no longer failing.
Yeah.
But you definitely need to find the root cause of that, because it could fail in production. And under load, like you said, it could fail big time.
Right. Yes. So that's one area. Very cool. The other one is around, so we also have data collectors that watch while tests are being run which code is getting hit. Okay. So it's like code coverage, but it's the application there is, okay, now we're about to go into production. We got these two more bug fixes we're going to do. You know, we got to be very careful. Okay. What tests are going to test that code that they just changed? And now with code coverage data, we can map that back to tests, map it to the code you change, and say, hey, if you run these three tests, they're going to test the code.
So you don't have to, you know, the old notion is that anytime you make any change, I have to do my full battery of tests.
Right.
Which, as you said, it could be a lot of manual tests. It could be,
yes,
like 50-60% manual tests, which is a lot of people time.
Exactly.
What you're saying is that, you know, we can actually come back and say, well, you know, you can get high confidence just running a subset of your test, and
yes,
exactly, here's the test.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And, you know, clearly it's not a silver bullet, and it's a, you know, we're calling them recommended tests to run or guidance. And there's a lot, you know, for example, if you change, you have a string function that you use in all your code, and you change that string function,
you're going to test all your code.
You're going to get a lot of tests back. Or if you add new code, you know, a bunch of new code that maybe no tests hit,
right,
you still got to wire them up into your existing code somewhere, so you can get some interesting data out. But it's more of a, you know, you need some human intelligence with that to understand what's going on. But it really helps create transparency between what developers are doing and what the testers have done, and help you reduce your risk when you're pushing stuff out.
Yeah, and fundamentally, anytime communication gets improved, you know, quality goes through the roof.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So a bunch of cool stuff like that. You know, part of that, the bug capture, we have a new manual testing tool that walks people through steps and then captures a video of what they did. So this is really cool. While they're testing, it's capturing a video, and then captures the steps they took, and then creates indexes by those steps into the video, right? So they say, hey, the bug occurred on this fifth step. You can fast forward through the video, click the link, you know, and start the video from that point and see exactly what they did.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. Neat stuff. And, you know, it's not rocket science either, but solving really fundamental problems that developers and testers have every day. I think it's going to bring a lot of value to testers and make software in the large much better.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've done so much to improve, you know, the development experience on the developer side.
Yeah.
That really, I mean, you know, test it, and not that we still can't improve and we still can't make quantum leaps there, but, you know, really, you know, QA quality, you know, that side of the house is where we need to, you know, focus some, you know, automation and some improvements.
Yeah, get some good tooling in for the testers. Absolutely.
So that kind of leads to my last question, you know, kind of just in general, you know, so not tool specific, and you shared a lot of cool stuff, you know, with us, you know, some of the other best practices that, you know, that you've seen that are kind of tool agnostic. You know, you've already talked about test early, test often, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay, so for performance testing, I'll say this, you know, you test early, understand your data, so you get your data size right. Most performance problems are going to be found just running the app. You don't need to run a load test. You don't need any automation. Just run your app at the data loads you expect and you're going to find a set of problems that you got to go solve. The other general guidance I have is a lot of times the perf problems aren't where you think they're going to be.
Yeah.
And I've seen this many times. Developers will spend a lot of time
looking at the code,
tuning,
right?
At, you know, bending over backwards to make this code fast, where the in that code path is spending less than 1% of the time there.
Right.
So the best you can do is a 1% improvement, even if you got it down to zero. So, you know, architect your application so it makes sense. Get the patterns down, and then discover the problems. Right. Discover the bottlenecks and don't try to anticipate them. And you know, I think that, and there's always trade-offs, and you always know there's probably two ways to do something. You know, one way is probably going to lead to performance problems, and you can see that from the architectural pattern. But don't spend a lot of time trying to performance tune something that may or may not be a problem.
Right. Cool. Well, I want to thank you for being on Thirsty Developer.
Okay, that was fun. Thanks.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. Actually, since I've done that interview, I've been looking a lot at the web testing functionality in Team System. We're doing actually an ArcReady tour right now, which ArcReady is our program for architects that we run in the central region of the United States. And one of our topics right now is scalable web applications. And as a result of, you know, the top being very topical and also hearing about all the great things that web load testing did in the tool from Ed during that interview, I actually started playing around with it. And it's really neat and really full-featured. But with that, I'll lead you guys into a blog you should know. Of course, Dave isn't here this week, so we can't get his blog pick. But I can tell you about a blog that you should know, and it's actually very topical. It's about Team System. It's not really a blog, but it does have an RSS subscription, and it's content that's you know, published quite frequently. It's actually a series of videos on Visual Studio Team System that you can do. Each one runs about, you know, kind of 5 to 15 minutes in length, and I think most of them are in the, like, you know, the 10-minute range. It's, you know, just a quick webcast-style video, you know, done with, you know, a tool like Camtasia or whatever, that lets you see a specific feature of Team System. So whether you have the product or whether you're looking at the product, it's kind of good to look and see what it does. And let me go ahead and give you the URL for that. It's asp.net/learn/VSTS-videos. And of course, the best place to do is to go to thirstydeveloper.com, and we'll have the link to the blog you should know in there. With that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up today's show. Again, without Dave around, I don't have a lot of banter to, I don't have a person to banter back and forth with. So just go ahead and send you guys out. As always, you know, you can find us on the Zune Marketplace, on the iTunes Music Store. If you go to thirstydeveloper.com, you can subscribe to the podcast directly from there. We invite you to comment on each and every show at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments about the show or to enter the Zune contest, just send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. You can find myself, Larry Clarkin, at larryclarkin.com. My co-host, Dave Bost, can be found at daveboss.com. And you can reach both of us on Twitter and Facebook. You guys have a great week.